your background.
We are not the same as the Eggheads, Shur said. The police have been part of the Battle Command Center from the start. But even now, we still don't know what this is all about. You continue to push the police out. You learn from us what you need about our techniques, and then you send us away one by one.
Several other police officers in attendance whispered to Shu to shut up. It surprised Wong that Shu dared to speak in this manner to a man of Cheng's rank, but Cheng's response surprised him even more.
Dasha, it seems that you still have the same problem you had back when you were in the army. You think you can speak for the police? Because of your poor record, you had already been suspended for several months, and you were about to be expelled from the force. I asked for you because I value your experience in city policing. You should treasure this opportunity.
Shu continued to speak roughly.
So, I'm working in the hope of redeeming myself by good service? I thought you told me that all my techniques were dishonest and crooked.
But useful. Cheng nodded at Shu. All we care about is if they're useful. In a time of war, we can't afford to be too scrupulous.
We can't be too fastidious,
a CIA officer said in perfect modern standard Mandarin.
We can no longer rely on conventional thinking.
The British colonel apparently also understood Chinese. He nodded.
To be or not to be,
he added in English.
It's a matter of life and death.
What is he saying?
Shu asked Wong.
Nothing,
Wong replied mechanically. The people before him seemed to be speaking out of a dream. Time of war? Where is this war? He twisted to look out one of the floor-length windows. Through the window he could see Beijing in the distance. Under the spring sun, cars filled the streets like a dense river. On a lawn, someone was walking a dog. A few children were playing. Which is more real, the world inside or outside these walls? General Cheng said,
Recently, the enemy has intensified the pattern of attacks. The targets remain elite scientists. Please begin by taking a look at the list of names in the document.
Wong took out the first page of the document, printed in large font. The list seemed to have been generated in a hurry, containing both Chinese and English names.
Professor Wong, as you look through these names, does anything strike you?
General Cheng asked.
I know three of the names. All of them are famous scholars working at the forefront of physics research.
Wong was a little distracted, his eyes locked onto the last name on the list. In his mind, the two characters took on a different tint than the names above it.
How can her name appear here? What happened to her?
You know her?
Shu pointed to the name with a thick finger, stained yellow from smoking. Wong did not reply.
Ha! Don't know her, but wanna know her.
Now Wong Miao understood why it made sense for General Cheng to have asked to have this man who was once a soldier under his command. Shu, who appeared so vulgar and careless, had eyes as sharp as knives. Maybe he wasn't a good cop, but he was certainly a fearsome one. A year earlier, Wong Miao had been in charge of the nanoscale components for the Sinotron 2 high-energy particle accelerator project. One afternoon, during a brief break at the Liansiang construction site, Wong was struck by the scene before him. As a landscape photography enthusiast, Wong often saw the sites around him as artistic compositions. The main component of the composition was the solenoid of the superconducting magnet they were still installing. About three stories high and only half completed, the magnet loomed like a monster made of giant blocks of metal and a confusing mess of cryogenic coolant pipes. Like a junk heap from the Industrial Revolution, the structure exuded inhuman technological grimness and steel-bound barbarity. In front of this metal monster stood the slim figure of a young woman. The composition's lighting was fantastic as well. The metal monster was buried in the shadow of a temporary construction shelter, further emphasizing its stern, rough quality. But a single ray of light from the westering sun, coming through the central hole in the shelter, fell right on the woman. The soft glow lit up her supple hair and highlighted her white neck above the collar of her overalls, as though a single flower was blooming in a metal ruin after a violent thunderstorm.
"What are you looking at? Get back to work!"
Wong was shocked out of his reverie, but then realized that the director of the Nanotechnology Research Center wasn't talking to him, but to a young engineer who had also been staring at the woman. Having returned from art to reality, Wong saw that the young woman wasn't an ordinary worker. The chief engineer stood next to her, explaining something respectfully.
"Who is she?"
Wong asked the director.
"You should know her,"
the director said, waving his hand around in a large circle.
"The first experiment on this 20 billion yuan accelerator will probably be to test her superstring model. Now, seniority matters in theoretical physics, and normally she wouldn't have been senior enough to get the first shot, but those older academics didn't dare to show up first, afraid that they might fail and lose face, so that's why she got the chance."
"What? Young Dong is a woman?"
"Indeed," the director said. "We only found out when we finally met her 2 days ago."
The young engineer asked,
"Does she have some psychological issue? Why else wouldn't she agree to be interviewed by the media? Maybe she's like Qian Zhongshu, who died without ever appearing on TV."
"But at least we knew Qian's gender. I bet Yang had some unusual experiences as a child. Maybe it made her somewhat autistic." Wong's words were tinged with a hint of self-mockery. He wasn't even famous enough for the media to be interested in him, let alone to turn down interview requests. Yang walked over with the chief engineer. As they passed, she smiled at Wong and the others, nodding lightly without saying anything. Wong remembered her limpid eyes. That night, Wong sat in his study and admired the few landscape photographs, his works he was the most proud of, hanging on the wall. His eyes fell on a frontier scene, a desolate valley terminating in a snow-capped mountain. On the near end of the valley, half of a dead tree, eroded by the vicissitudes of many years, took up one-third of the picture. In his imagination, Wong placed the figure that lingered in his mind at the far end of the valley. Surprisingly, it made the entire scene come alive, as though the world in the photograph recognized that tiny figure and responded to it, as though the whole scene existed for her. He then imagined her figure in each of his other photographs, sometimes pasting her two eyes into the empty sky over the landscapes. Those images also came alive, achieving a beauty that Wong had never imagined. Wong had always thought that his photographs lacked some kind of soul. Now he understood that they were missing her.
"All the physicists on this list have committed suicide in the last 2 months,"
General Chung said. Wong was thunderstruck. Gradually, his black-and-white landscapes faded into blankness in his mind. The photographs no longer had her figure in the foreground, and her eyes were wiped from the skies. Those worlds were all dead.
"When did this happen?"
Wong asked mechanically.
"The last 2 months,"
Chung repeated.
"You mean the last name, don't you?"
Shu responded with satisfaction.
"She was the last to commit suicide. 2 nights ago, overdosed on sleeping pills. She died very peacefully, no pain."
For a moment, Wong was grateful to Shu.
"Why?"
Wong asked. The dead scenes in those landscape photographs continued to flicker through his mind. General Chung replied,
The only thing we can be sure of is this. The same reason drove all of them to suicide. But it's hard to articulate. Maybe it's impossible for us non-specialists to even understand the reason. The document contains excerpts from their suicide notes. Everyone can examine them after the meeting.
Wong flipped through the notes. All of them seemed to be long essays.
Dr. Ding, would you please show Yang Dong's note to Professor Wong? Hers is the shortest and possibly the most representative.
The man in question, Ding Yi, had been silent until now. After another pause, he finally took out a white envelope and handed it across the table to Wong. She whispered,
"He was Yang's boyfriend."
Wong recalled that he had seen Ding at the particle accelerator construction site in Liangxiang. He was a theoretician who had become famous for his discovery of the macro atom while studying ball lightning. Wong took from the envelope a thin, irregularly shaped sheet, exuding a faint fragrance. Not paper, but birch bark. A single line of graceful characters was written on it. All the evidence points to a single conclusion. Physics has never existed and will never exist. I know what I'm doing is irresponsible, but I have no choice. There wasn't even a signature. She was gone.
Physics does not exist.
Wong had no idea what to think. General Chung closed the folder.
The file also contains some specific information related to the experimental results obtained after the completion of the world's three newest particle accelerators. It's very technical, and we won't be discussing it here. The first focus of our investigation is the frontiers of science. UNESCO designated 2005 the World Year of Physics, and that organization gradually developed out of the numerous academic conferences and exchanges that occurred among world physicists that year. Dr. Ding, since you're a theoretical physicist, can you give us more background on it?
Ding nodded. I have no direct connection with the frontiers of science, but it is famous in academia. Its core goal is a response to the following. Since the second half of the 20th century, physics has gradually lost the concision and simplicity of its classical theories. Modern theoretical models have become more and more complex, vague, and uncertain. Experimental verification has become more difficult as well. This is a sign that the forefront of physics research seems to be hitting a wall. Members of the frontiers of science want to attempt a new way of thinking. To put it simply, they want to use the methods of science to discover the limits of science, to try to find out if there is a limit to how deeply and precisely science can know nature, a boundary beyond which science cannot go. The development of modern physics seems to suggest that such a line has been touched.
Very good, General Chung said. According to our investigation, most of the scholars who committed suicide had some connection with the frontiers of science, and some were even members. But we found no evidence of the use of illegal psychotropic drugs or techniques akin to the psychological manipulation of religious cults. In other words, even if the frontiers of science influenced them, it was only through legal academic exchanges. Professor Wong, since they recently contacted you, we'd like to ask you for some information.
Sure, added gruffly.
Including the names of your contacts, the times and locations of meetings, the content of your conversations, and if you exchanged letters or emails.
Shut up, Dasha,
General Chung said. Another police officer leaned over and whispered to Shu,
Do you think we'll forget you have a mouth if you don't use it all the time?
Shu picked up his teacup, saw the drowned cigarette butt inside, and put it back down. Shu's questions irritated Wong again, not unlike the feeling a man has upon finding out that he has swallowed a fly with his meal. The gratitude he had felt earlier was gone without a trace, but he restrained himself and answered.
My contact with the frontiers of science began with Shen Yufei. She's a Japanese physicist of Chinese descent who currently works for a Japanese company here in Beijing. She once worked at a Mitsubishi lab, researching nanotech. We met at a technical conference at the beginning of this year. Through her, I met a few other physicist friends, all members of the Frontiers of Science, some Chinese, some foreign. When I talked with them, all the topics were, how do I put this? Very radical. They all involve the question that Dr. Ding just described. What is the limit of science? Initially, I didn't have much interest in these topics. I thought of them as only an idle pastime. My work is in applied research, and I don't know much about these theoretical matters. Mainly, I was interested in listening to their discussions and arguments. All of them were deep thinkers with novel points of view, and I felt that I was opening my mind through the exchanges. Gradually, I grew more interested. But all our talk was limited to pure theory and nothing else. They once invited me to join the Frontiers of Science, but if I had done so, attending the discussions would have turned into a duty. Since my time and energy were limited, I declined. Professor Wong, General Chung said, we'd like you to accept the invitation and join the Frontiers of Science. This is the main reason we asked you here today. Through you, we'd like to learn more about the internal workings of the organization.
You want me to be a mole?
Wong was uneasy.
A mole? Shu laughed.
Chung gave Shu a reprimanding look. He turned back to Wong.
We just want you to give us some information. We have no other way in.
Wong shook his head.
I'm sorry, General. I cannot do this.
Professor Wong, the Frontiers of Science is made up of elite international scholars. Investigating it is an extremely complex and sensitive matter. For us, it's like walking across thin ice. Without someone from academia helping us, we cannot make any progress. This is why we're making this request. But we'll respect your wishes. If you won't agree, we understand.
I am very busy at work. I just don't have the time.
General Chung nodded.
All right, Professor Wong. We won't waste any more of your time. Thank you for coming to this meeting.
Wong waited a few more seconds before realizing that he had been dismissed. General Chung politely accompanied Wong to the door. They could hear Shu's loud voice behind them.
It's better this way. I disagree with the plan anyway. So many bookworms have already killed themselves. If we send him, he'd be a meat dumpling thrown to the dogs.
Wong turned around and walked back to Shu. Forcing his anger down, Wong said,
The way you speak is not appropriate for a good police officer.
Who said I'm a good cop?
We don't know why these researchers killed themselves, but you shouldn't speak of them so contemptuously. Their minds have made irreplaceable contributions to humanity.
You're saying they're better than me?
Still seated, Shu lifted his eyes to meet Wong's.
At least I wouldn't kill myself just because someone told me some bullshit.
You think I would?
I have to be concerned about your safety.
That trademark smirk again.
I think I would be much safer than you in such situations. You must know that a person's ability to discern the truth is directly proportional to his knowledge.
I'm not sure about that. Take someone like you.
Be quiet, Dasha,
General Chung said.
One more sentence and you're out of here.
It's okay,
Wong said.
Let him speak.
He turned to General Chung.
I've changed my mind. I will join the Frontiers of Science as you wish.
Good.
Shu nodded vigorously.
Stay alert after you join. gather intelligence whenever it's convenient. For example, glance at their computer screens, memorize email or web addresses.
That's enough. You misunderstand me. I don't want to be a spy. I just want to prove you're an idiot.
If you remain alive after you've joined them for a while, that would be the best proof. But I'm afraid for you.
Shu lifted his face, and the smirk turned into a wolfish grin.
Of course I'll stay alive, but I never want to see you again.
They kept Wong out of the way while the others left, so he wouldn't have to deal with Shu Qiong again. Then General Chung walked Wong all the way down the stairs and called for a car to take him back. He said to Wong,
"Don't worry about Shu Qiong. That's just his personality. He's actually a very experienced beat officer and anti-terrorism expert. 20 years ago, he was a soldier in my company."
As they approached the car, Chung added,
"Professor Wong, you must have many questions."
"What did everything you talked about in there have to do with the military?"
"War has everything to do with the army."
Wong looked around in the spring sun, baffled.
"But where is this war? This is probably the most peaceful period in history."
Chung gave him an inscrutable smile.
"You will know more soon. Everyone will know. Professor Wong, have you ever had anything happen to you that changed your life completely? Some event where afterward the world became a totally different place for you?"
"No."
"Then your life has been fortunate. The world is full of unpredictable factors, yet you have never faced a crisis."
Wong turned over the words in his mind, still not understanding.
"I think that's true of most lives."
"Then most people have lived fortunately."
"But many generations have lived in this plain manner."
"All fortunate."
Wong laughed, shaking his head.
"I have to confess that I'm not feeling very sharp today. Are you suggesting that..."
"Yes. The entire history of humankind has been fortunate. From the Stone Age till now, no real crisis has occurred. We've been very lucky. But if it's all luck, then it has to end one day. Let me tell you, it's ended. Prepare for the worst."
Wong wanted to ask more, but Chung shook his head and said goodbye, preventing any more questions. After Wong got into the car, the driver asked for his address. Wong gave it and asked,
"Oh, were you the one who took me here? I thought it was the same type of car."
"No, it wasn't me. I took Dr. Ding here."
Wong had a new idea. He asked the driver to take him to Ding's address instead. 5. A game of pool. As soon as he opened the door to Ding Yi's brand new 3-bedroom apartment, Wong smelled alcohol. Ding was lying on the sofa with the TV on, staring at the ceiling. The apartment was unfinished, with only a few pieces of furniture and little decoration, and the huge living room seemed very empty. The most eye-catching object was the pool table in the corner. Ding didn't seem annoyed by Wong's unannounced visit. He was clearly in the mood to talk to someone.
"I bought the apartment about 3 months ago," Ding said. "Why did I buy it? Did I really think she was gonna become interested in starting a family?"
His laugh sounded drunk.
"You too."
Wong wanted to know the details of Yang Dong's life, but didn't know how to ask the questions.
"She was like a star, always so distant. Even the light she shone on me was always cold."
Ding walked to one of the windows and looked up at the night sky. Wong said nothing. All he wanted now was to hear her voice. But a year ago, as the sun sank in the west, when she and he had locked eyes for a moment, they had not spoken to each other. He had never heard her voice. Ding waved his hand as though trying to flick something away.
Professor Wong, you were right. Don't get involved with the police or the military. They're all idiots. The deaths of those physicists had nothing to do with the frontiers of science. I've explained it to them many times, but I can't get them to understand.
They seem to have conducted some independent investigation.
Yes, and the investigation's scope was global. They should already know that two of the dead never had any contact with the frontiers of science, including Yong Dong.
Ding seemed to have trouble saying her name.
Ding Yi, you know that I'm already involved, so as far as why Yong made the choice that she did, I'd like to know. I think you must know some of it.
Wong thought he must sound very foolish as he tried hard to disguise his real intent.
If you know more, you'll only get pulled in deeper. Right now, you're just superficially involved, but with more knowledge, your spirit will be drawn in as well. And then, it'll mean real trouble.
I work in applied research. I'm not as sensitive as you theoreticians.
All right, then. Do you play pool?
Ding walked to the pool table.
I used to play a little in college.
She and I loved to play. It reminded us of particles colliding in the accelerator.
Ding picked up two balls, one black and one white. He set the black ball next to one of the pockets and placed the white ball about 10 centimeters from the black ball.
Can you pocket the black ball?
This close? Anyone can do it.
Try.
Wong picked up the cue, struck the white ball lightly, and drove the black ball into the pocket.
Good. Come, now let's move the table to a different location.
Ding directed the confused Wong to pick up the heavy table. Together, they moved it to another corner of the living room, next to a window. Then Ding scooped out the black ball, set it next to the pocket, and again picked up the white ball and set it down about 10 centimeters away.
Think you can do it again?
Of course.
Go for it.
Again, Wong easily made the shot. Ding waved his hands.
Let's move it again.
They lifted the table and set it down in a third corner of the living room. Ding set up the two balls as before.
Go.
Listen, we...
Go!
Wong shrugged helplessly. He managed to pocket the black ball a third time. They moved the table two more times, once next to the door of the living room, and finally back to the original location. Ding set up the two balls twice more, and Wong twice more made his shot. By now, both were slightly winded.
Good. That's the conclusion of the experiment. Let's analyze the results.
Ding lit a cigarette before continuing.
We ran the same experiment 5 times. 4 of the experiments differed in both location and time. 2 of the experiments were at the same location, but different times. Aren't you shocked by the results?
He opened his arms exaggeratedly.
5 times! Every colliding experiment yielded the exact same result.
What are you trying to say?
Wong asked, gasping.
Can you explain this incredible result? Please, use the language of physics.
All right. During these 5 experiments, the mass of the two balls never changed. In terms of their locations, as long as we're using the frame of reference of the tabletop, there was also no change. The velocity of the white ball striking the black ball also remained basically the same throughout. Thus, the transfer of momentum between the two balls didn't change. Therefore, in all 5 experiments, the result was the black ball being driven into the pocket.
Ding picked up a bottle of brandy and 2 dirty glasses from the floor. He filled both and handed one to Wong. Wong declined.
Come on, let's celebrate.
We've discovered a great principle of nature. The laws of physics are invariant across space and time. All the physical laws of human history, from Archimedes' principle to string theory, and all the scientific discoveries and intellectual fruits of our species are the byproducts of this great law. Compared to us two theoreticians, Einstein and Hawking are mere applied engineers.
I still don't understand what you're getting at.
Imagine another set of results. The first time the white ball drove the black ball into the pocket. The second time the black ball bounced away. The third time the black ball flew onto the ceiling. The fourth time the black ball shot around the room like a frightened sparrow, finally taking refuge in your jacket pocket. The fifth time the black ball flew away at nearly the speed of light, breaking the edge of the pool table, shooting through the wall, and leaving the Earth and the solar system, just like Asimov once described. What would you think then?
Ding watched Wong. After a long silence, Wong finally said,
"This actually happened. Am I right?"
Ding drained both glasses in his hands. He stared at the pool table as though looking at a demon.
"Yes, it happened. In the last few years, we finally obtained the necessary equipment for experimentally testing fundamental theories. Three expensive pool tables have been constructed. One in North America, another in Europe, and the third you're familiar with in Liangxiang. Your nanotechnology research center earned a lot of money from it. These high-energy particle accelerators raised the amount of energy available for colliding particles by an order of magnitude to a level never before achieved by the human race. Yet, with the new equipment, the same particles, the same energy levels, and the same experimental parameters would yield different results. Not only would the results vary if different accelerators were used, but even with the same accelerator, experiments performed at different times would give different results. Physicists panicked. They repeated the ultra-high-energy collision experiments again and again, using the same conditions, but every time the result was different, and there seemed to be no pattern.
"What does this mean?"
Wong asked. When he saw Ding staring at him without speaking, he added,
"Oh, I'm in nanotech, and I also work with microscale structures. But that's orders of magnitude larger than the scale at which you do your work. Please, educate me."
"It means that the laws of physics are not invariant across time and space."
"What does that mean?"
"I think you can deduce the rest. Even General Chung figured it out. He's really a smart man."
Wong looked outside the window thoughtfully. The lights of the city were so bright that the stars of the night sky were drowned out.
"It means that laws of physics that could be applied anywhere in the universe do not exist, which means that physics also does not exist."
Wong turned back from the window.
"I know what I'm doing is irresponsible, but I have no choice,"
Ding said.
"That was the second half of her note. You just stumbled on the first half. Now, can you understand her?
At least a little?"
Wong picked up the white ball. He caressed it for a bit and put it back down.
"For someone exploring the forefront of theory, that would indeed be a catastrophe."
"To accomplish something in theoretical physics requires one to have almost religious faith. It's easy to be led to the abyss."
As they said their farewells, Ding gave Wong an address.
"If you have the time, please visit Yongdong's mother. She and her mother always lived together, and she was the entirety of her mother's life. Now the old woman is all alone."
"Ding, you clearly know a lot more than I do. Can you tell me more? You really believe that the laws of physics are not invariant across time and space?"
"I don't know anything."
Ding stared into Wong's eyes for a long time. Finally, he said,
"But that is the question."
Wong knew that he was only finishing what the British colonel had begun to say. To be or not to be, That is the question. 6. The Shooter and the Farmer. The next day was the start of the weekend. Wong got up early and left on his bicycle. As a hobby photographer, his favorite subjects were wildernesses free of human presence. But now that he was middle-aged, he no longer had the energy to engage in such indulgent travel and only shot city scenes. Consciously or subconsciously, he usually chose corners of the city that held some aspect of the wild, a dried lake bed in a park, the freshly turned soil of a construction site, a weed struggling out of cracks in cement. In order to eliminate the busy colors of the city in the background, he only used black and white film. Unexpectedly, he had developed his own style and had gained some notice. His works had been selected for 2 exhibitions, and he was a member of the Photographers Association. Every time he went out to take pictures, he would ride his bike and wander around the city in search of inspiration and compositions that caught his fancy. Often, he would be out all day. Today, Wong felt strange. His photography style tended toward the classical, calm and dignified. But today he could not seem to get in the mood necessary for such compositions. In his mind, the city, as it awoke from its slumber, seemed to be built on quicksand. The stability was illusory. All night long he had dreamt of those 2 billiard balls. They flew around a dark space without any pattern, the black one disappearing against the black background and only revealing its existence occasionally when it obscured the white ball.
Can the fundamental nature of matter really be lawlessness? Can the stability and order of the world be but a temporary, dynamic equilibrium achieved in a corner of the universe, a short-lived eddy in a chaotic current?
Without realizing it, he found himself at the foot of the newly completed China Central Television Building. He stopped at the side of the road and lifted his head to gaze up at this gigantic, A-shaped tower, trying to recapture the feeling of stability. His gaze followed the sharp tip of the building, gleaming in the morning sunlight, pointing toward the blue, bottomless depths of the sky. 2 words suddenly floated into his consciousness: shooter and farmer. When the members of the Frontiers of Science discussed physics, they often used the abbreviation SF. They didn't mean science fiction, but the 2 words shooter and farmer. This was a reference to 2 hypotheses, both involving the fundamental nature of the laws of the universe. In the shooter hypothesis, a good marksman shoots at a target, creating a hole every 10 centimeters. Now suppose the surface of the target is inhabited by intelligent, 2-dimensional creatures. Their scientists, after observing the universe, discover a great law. There exists a hole in the universe every 10 centimeters. They have mistaken the result of the marksman's momentary whim for an unalterable law of the universe. The farmer hypothesis, on the other hand, has the flavor of a horror story. Every morning, on a turkey farm, the farmer comes to feed the turkeys. A scientist turkey, having observed this pattern to hold without change for almost a year, makes the following discovery. Every morning, at 11, food arrives. On the morning of Thanksgiving, the scientist announces this law to the other turkeys. But that morning at 11, food doesn't arrive. Instead, the farmer comes and kills the entire flock. Wong felt the road beneath his feet shift like quicksand. The A-shaped building seemed to wobble and sway. He quickly brought his gaze back to the street. To get rid of the anxiety, Wong forced himself to finish a roll of film. He returned home before lunch. His wife had taken their son out and wouldn't be back for a while. Usually, Wong would rush to develop the film, but today he wasn't in the mood. After a quick and simple lunch, he went to take a nap. Because he hadn't slept well the night before, by the time he woke up, it was almost 5. Finally, remembering the roll of film he had shot, he went into the cramped dark room he had converted from a closet. The film developed. Wong began to look through the negatives to see if any shots were worth printing, but he saw something strange in the very first image. The shot was of a small lawn outside a large shopping center. The center of the negative held a line of tiny white marks, which, upon closer examination, turned out to be numbers. 1200:00:00. The second picture also had numbers, 1199:49:33, as did the third, 1199:40:18. In fact, every picture in the roll had such numbers, until the 36th and last image, 1194:16:37. Wong's first thought was that something was wrong with the film. The camera he had used was a 1988 Leica M2, entirely mechanical, which made it impossible for it to add a date stamp. Given the excellent lens and refined mechanical operation, it was considered a great professional camera, even in this digital age. After re-examining the negatives, Wong discovered another strange thing about the numbers. They seemed to adapt to the background. If the background was black, the numbers were white, and vice versa. The shift seemed designed to maximize the numbers' contrast for visibility. By the time Wong saw the 16th negative, his heart was beating faster, and a chill crept up his spine. This shot was of a dead tree against an old wall. The wall was mottled, showing a pattern of alternating black and white patches on the negative. Given this background, either white or black numbers would have been hard to read. But in the picture, the numbers arranged themselves vertically to fit along the curve of the tree trunk, allowing the white numbers to show up against the dark coloring of the dead tree like a crawling snake. Wong began to analyze the mathematical pattern in the numbers. At first he thought it was some kind of a sign numbering, but the difference between the numbers wasn't constant. He then guessed that the numbers represented time in the form of hours, minutes, and seconds. He took out his shooting diary, in which he recorded the exact time he took each picture, down to the minute, and discovered the difference between two successive numbers on the photographs corresponded to the difference in time between when they were taken. A countdown. The countdown began with 1,200 hours, and now there were about 1,194 hours left, just under 50 days.
Now? No, at the moment I took the last photograph. Is the countdown still proceeding?
Wong walked out of the darkroom, loaded a new roll of film in the Leica, and began to snap random shots. He even walked onto the balcony for a few outdoor shots. Afterward, he took out the film and went back into the darkroom. In the developed roll, the numbers again appeared on every negative, like ghosts. The first one was marked 1187:27:39. The difference matched the passage of time between the last shot of the last roll and the first shot of this roll. After that, the number decreased by 3 or 4 seconds in each image, 1187:27:35, 1187:27:31, 1187:27:27, 1187:27:24, just like the intervals between the quick shots he had taken. The countdown continued. Wong again loaded a new roll of film. He snapped off the shots rapidly, even taking a few with the lens cap on. As he took out the roll of film, his wife and son returned. Before he went into the darkroom to develop the film, he loaded another roll of film in the Leica and handed it to his wife.
Here, finish the roll for me.
What am I supposed to shoot?
His wife looked at him, amazed. He never allowed anyone to touch his camera, though she and their son had no interest in doing so either. In their eyes, it was a boring antique that cost more than 20,000 yuan.
Doesn't matter, just shoot whatever you want.
Wong stuffed the camera into her hands and ducked into the darkroom.
All right. Dodo, why don't I take some pictures of you?
His wife aimed the camera at their son. Wong's mind suddenly filled with the imagined sight of the ghost-like figures appearing over his son's face, like a hangman's noose. He shuddered.
No, don't do that. Shoot something else.
The shutter clicked, and his wife had taken her first shot.
"Why can't I press it again?"
she asked. Wong taught her how to wind the film to advance it.
"Like that. You have to do it after every shot."
Then he ducked back into the darkroom.
"So complicated."
His wife, a doctor, couldn't understand why anyone would use such expensive but outdated equipment when 10 or even 20 megapixel digital cameras were common. And he even used black and white film. After the third roll of film developed, Wong held it up against the red light. He saw that the ghost-like countdown continued. The numbers showed up clearly on every randomly shot picture, including the few he had taken with the lens cap on. 1187:19:06, 1187:19:03, 1187:18:59, 1187:18:56. His wife knocked on the dark room door and told him she was finished with the roll. Wong opened the door and took the camera from her. As he took out the roll, his hands trembled. Ignoring his wife's concerned look, he took the film back into the darkroom and shut the door. He worked fast and clumsily, spilling developer and fixer all over the ground. Soon the images were developed. He closed his eyes, silently praying.
"Please don't appear. No matter what, please don't appear now. Don't make it my turn."
He examined the wet film with a magnifying glass. There was no countdown. The negatives held only the interior shots his wife had taken. She had used a slow shutter speed, and her amateurish operation left all the scenes blurry. But Wong thought these were the most enjoyable pictures he had ever seen. Wong came out of the darkroom and let out a held breath. He was covered in sweat. His wife was in the kitchen cooking, and his son was playing in his room. He sat on the sofa and thought the matter over more rationally. First, the numbers, which precisely recorded the passage of time between shots and which showed signs of intelligence, could not possibly have been pre-printed on the film. Something exposed them onto the film. But what? Did the camera have a malfunction? Had some mechanism been installed in the camera without his knowledge? He took off the lens and disassembled the camera. He examined the interior with a magnifying glass and checked every dustless component without discovering anything out of place. Then, considering that the numbers showed up even in the shots taken with the lens cap on, he realized the most likely light source was some kind of penetrating ray. But how is this technology possible? Where was the source of the rays? How could they have been aimed? At least, given current technology, such power would be supernatural. In order to see if the ghostly countdown had disappeared, Wong loaded another roll into the Leica and again began to shoot randomly. When this roll was developed, Wong's short-lived calm was again shattered. He felt himself pushed to the precipice of madness. The countdown had returned. Based on the numbers, it had never stopped, just failed to display on the roll shot by his wife. 1186:34:13, 1186:34:02, 1186:33:46, 1186:33:35. Wong rushed out of the darkroom and continued through the door of the apartment. He knocked loudly on the door of his neighbor, retired Professor Zong.
"Professor Zong, do you have a camera? Not a digital one, but one that takes film?"
"A professional photographer like you wants to borrow my camera? What happened to your expensive one? I have only digital point-and-shoots. Are you okay? Your face looks so pale."
"Please, let me borrow it."
Zong returned with a common Kodak digital camera.
"Here you go. You can just delete the few pictures already on there."
"Thank you."
Wong seized the camera and rushed back home. He actually had three more film cameras and a digital one, but Wong thought it better to borrow a camera from someone else. He looked at his own camera lying on the sofa and the few rolls of film, paused in thought, and decided to reload the Leica with new film. He handed the borrowed digital camera to his wife, who was setting out dinner.
Quick, shoot another few pictures like before.
What are you doing? Look at your face. What's happening?
Don't worry about it. Shoot!
She put down the dishes and came over to him, her eyes filled with both worry and fright. Wong stuffed the Kodak into the hands of his 6-year-old son, who was about to start eating dinner.
Dodo, come help Daddy. Push this button. All right, like that. That's one shot. Push it again. That's another shot. Keep on shooting like that. You can take pictures of anything you want.
The boy learned quickly. He was very interested and made rapid shots. Wong turned around and picked up the Leica from the couch and began to shoot as well. The father and son kept on pressing the shutters as though they were mad. His wife, not knowing what to do as the flashes went off around her, began to cry.
Wong Miao, I know that you've been under a lot of pressure lately, but please, I hope you haven't...
Wong finished the roll in the Leica and grabbed the digital from his son. He thought for a moment, and then, in order to avoid his wife, went into the bedroom and took a few more shots with the digital. He used the optical finder instead of the LCD because he was afraid to see the results, though he was going to have to face them soon enough. Wong took out the film from the Leica and went back into the darkroom. He shut the door and worked. After the film was developed, he examined the images carefully. Because his hands were shaking, he had to hold the magnifying glass with both hands. On the negatives, the countdown continued. Wong rushed out of the darkroom and began to look through the digital images on the Kodak. On the LCD, he saw that the pictures his son had taken did not have the numbers, but in the pictures that he took, the countdown showed clearly and was synchronized with the numbers on the film. By using different cameras, Wong was trying to eliminate problems with the camera or the film as possible explanations. But by allowing his son and his wife to take some pictures, he discovered an even stranger result. The countdown only appeared on the pictures he took. Desperate, Wong picked up the pile of film rolls, like a tangled nest of snakes, like a bunch of ropes tied into an impossible knot. He knew that he could not solve the mystery on his own. Who could he turn to? His old classmates from college and his colleagues at the research center were hopeless. Like him, they were all people with technical minds. Intuitively, he knew that this went beyond a technical problem. He thought of Ding Yi. But that man was now in a spiritual crisis of his own. Finally, he thought of the frontiers of science. These were deep thinkers who remained open-minded. So he dialed Shen Yufei's number.
Dr. Shen, I have a problem. I must see you. Come over,
Shen said and hung up. Wong was surprised. Shen was a woman of few words. Some in the frontiers of science jokingly called her the female Hemingway. But the fact that she didn't even ask him what was wrong made Wong uncertain whether he should be comforted or even more anxious. He stuffed the mess of film into a bag and, taking the digital camera, rushed out of the apartment as his wife watched him anxiously. He could have driven, but even with the city being full of lights, he wanted to be with people. He called for a cab. Shen lived in a luxury housing development, reachable by one of the newer commuter rails. Here, the lights were much dimmer. The houses were set around a small, artificial lake, stocked with fish for the residents, and at night the place felt like a village. Shen was clearly well off, but Wong could never figure out the source of her wealth. Neither her old research position nor her current job with a private company could earn that much income. But her house didn't show signs of luxury on the inside. It was used as a gathering place for the frontiers of science, and Wong always thought it resembled a small library with a meeting room. In the living room, Wong saw Wei Chang, Shen's husband. Wei was about 40 years old and had the look of a staid, honest intellectual. Wong knew little about him other than his name. Shen hadn't said much when she introduced him. He didn't seem to have a job, since he stayed home all day. He never showed any interest in the frontiers of science discussions, but seemed used to the sight of so many scholars coming to their house. But he wasn't idle. He appeared to be conducting some kind of research at home, always deep in thought. Whenever he met any visitor, he would greet them absent-mindedly and then return to his room upstairs. Most of his day was spent there. One time, Wong glanced into his room through the half-open door and saw an astonishing sight, a powerful HP workstation. He was sure of what he saw because the workstation was the same model as the one he used at the research center. Slate gray chassis, model RX8620, 4 years old. It seemed very strange to own a machine costing more than 1,000,000 yuan just for personal use. What was Wei Chang doing with it all day?
Yufei is a bit busy right now. Why don't you wait a while?
Wei Chang walked upstairs. Wong tried to wait, but he found that he couldn't be still, so he followed Wei Chang. Wei was about to enter his room with the workstation when he saw Wong behind him, but he didn't seem annoyed. He pointed to the room across from his.
She's in there.
Wong knocked on the door. It wasn't locked, and it opened a crack. Shen was seated in front of a computer, playing a game. He was surprised to see that she wore a V-suit. The V-suit was a very popular piece of equipment among gamers, made up of a panoramic viewing helmet and a haptic feedback suit. The suit allowed the player to experience the sensations of the game, being struck by a fist, being stabbed by a knife, being burned by flames, and so on. It was also capable of generating feelings of extreme heat and cold, even simulating the sensation of being exposed in a snowstorm. Wong walked behind her. As the game was displayed only on the inside of the panoramic viewing helmet, there were no colorful images on the computer monitor. Wong suddenly remembered Shu Qiang's comment about memorizing web and email addresses. He glanced at the monitor. The game site's URL caught his attention, www.threebody.net. Shen took off the helmet and stripped off the haptic feedback suit. She put on her glasses, which appeared extra large against her thin face. Without any expression, she nodded at Wong and said nothing. Wong took out the mess of film rolls and began to explain his strange experience. Shen paid full attention to his story, picking up the rolls of film and only casually looking at them. This surprised Wong, but further confirmed for him that Shen wasn't completely ignorant about what he was going through. He almost stopped speaking, but Shen kept on nodding at him, indicating that he should continue. When he finished, Shen spoke for the first time.
How's the nanomaterial project you're leading proceeding?
This non sequitur disoriented Wong.
The nanomaterial project? What does that have to do with this?
He pointed at the rolls of film. Shen didn't answer, but continued to stare at him, waiting for him to answer her question. This was always her style, never wasting a single word.
Stop your research,
she said.
A what?
Wong wasn't sure he heard right.
What are you talking about?
Shen remained silent.
Stop? That's a key national project.
Shen still said nothing, only looking at him calmly.
You have to give me a reason.
Just stop. Try it.
What do you know? Tell me.
I've told you all I can.
I can't stop the project. It's impossible.
Just stop. Try it.
That was the end of the conversation about the countdown. After that, no matter how hard Wong tried, Shen only repeated,
"Just stop. Try it."
I understand now, Wong said. The Frontiers of Science isn't just a discussion group about fundamental theory like you claimed. Its connection to reality is far more complicated than I had imagined.
No, it's the opposite. Your impression is due to the fact that the frontiers of science concerns matters far more fundamental than you imagine.
Desperate, Wong got up to leave without saying goodbye. Mutely, Shen accompanied him to the door and watched him as he got into the taxi. Just then, another car drove up and braked to a hard stop in front of the door. A man got out. By the faint light leaking from the house, Wong recognized him immediately. The man was Pan Han, one of the most prominent members of the Frontiers of Science. A biologist, he had successfully predicted the birth defects associated with long-term consumption of genetically modified foods. He had also predicted the ecological disasters that would come with cultivation of genetically modified crops. Unlike the prophets of doom who regularly warned of catastrophes without any particulars, Pon made predictions that always gave many specific